Keegan with another episode at libertarianprogressive.com, blogtalkradio.com/election channel, where we interview independent third-party candidates. We're a media organization. We're independent, and we interview independent third-party candidates who are on the ballots. The full spectrum, Green Party, independents, libertarians, no party affiliation, and other parties. We believe if a candidate has gathered enough signatures to be on the ballot and has a statistical chance to win, then responsible media will include them in the debates and interview them to educate and inform the public of their options. So today we have an interview with Napoleon A. Bell, independent for the Ohio House in District Number 25 for 2016. Let's give him a call here and let our audience be aware of some of their options this year.
Hello, it's Napoleon.
Hi, Napoleon. This is Thomas Keegan. You're on with blogtalkradio.com/election channel, libertarianprogressive.com. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon to you.
And I was just giving you an intro there before we gave you a call here, and you're running as an independent in the great state of Ohio, District Number 25 for the Ohio House, and we're just also looking at your website, which is NapoleonBell.com, and there you can see a list of issues and some more information. And actually, the first question we'd like to ask is if you could cover the three issues that you listed, economics, education, and safety, and if you could inform our listeners, our audience, about the issues that you're running on your platform.
Sure, I'd be more than happy to. Well, you know, first of all, thanks for calling, and I'm glad to have this opportunity to get my message out to your audience and hopefully to the voters here in Columbus, Ohio. First of all, the platform of education. You know, I feel very strongly, because we see education is the basis, for putting together this pyramid in a sense of making a difference here. So it's the basis of I feel of so much, and we have to make sure that we have equal access, to a high quality education to all people, and not be determined by your zip code, but to all of our young people here. And I say high quality, but also safe education, again, regardless of your zip code. I say that because I've spoke to too many young people I've convened and been a part of too many youth summits in regards to them feeling safe, whether they're at home and going to school, and then also when they're at school, they feel the safest, but they worry about the inside or the outside coming into the inside. And so some of our young people are really dealing with something like PTSD. So I think that we have to make sure that there's equal access to a high quality and safe education. And then adequate funding for wraparound services. I just talked about potentially PTSD in our young people and those services that some school districts need to have those services. So we have to make sure that there's adequate funding for those wraparound services so that our young people have the best opportunity to be able to learn in that environment. Secondly, I look at, statewide is the teacher salaries. We have to really do something about that because they're just actually too low. And we understand the salaries are based upon, the money's available, and that goes back to the funding based upon, the per pupil cost. So I think that's right around $7,000 per pupil, which we really have to look at that again, because that's just not enough to really get the necessary things done and to have the best outcome and opportunities for our young people and for the teachers in the schools. Because we have, in Ohio, I believe we have about 613 school districts, in the state. And, and I'm not sure how many kids that is, but, it is something that we have to address because there are so many young people that I think are slipping through the cracks and also just giving up. So we want to make sure that we address that. And then going on beyond, just the middle school and high school and grade school, we have to look at higher education. We have graduates finishing about, with $80,000 or $100,000 in debt. and getting out of college, and then sometimes, and many times, not being able to get a job after that. And so they're finding themselves wrapped up in debt and not being able to get a job that is that can pay the bills. And so that's a problem. And so I'm looking at, you know, what I want to look at is tuition caps. Something that you know, when we have our state institutions, we can't be, you know, educating our kids, but then leaving them so in debt that then, you know, all they're doing, you know, for the next 10, 15 years is paying off debt. So we want to make sure that our graduates have the best opportunity to be able to pour into the community that they're in, and not having to be strapped with debt. One of the other platform pieces, economics. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, I look at it with access to living wage jobs. We've got to make sure that happens. In Columbus, Ohio, in the 25th House District, which I'm running for, we have certain areas and communities that are struggling. And just to you know, to have a job, that's not a possible. You must have, you know, one, two, three jobs to be able to make it. And so we've got to have access to living wage jobs in the 25th House District, but also I know that so many others are dealing with that throughout the state. And so what, you know, I'm looking to do is attract businesses that meet the needs of the neighborhoods for community stabilization, because we've got to stabilize these communities. They're going through such struggle, and there's loss of hope and feeling of helplessness, that we've got to stabilize our communities. And the first thing is to really bring some jobs so that we can get people busy, actively working, and then they will reinvest in their communities by being a part of that community. And so I look at also low interest loans for small businesses, and also for small business incubators to be able to start new businesses and not be over in debt. I had a conversation with one young man who started a trucking business, and the trucking business was going, you know, okay, and he was looking to try to purchase another truck. And he says, you know, if I can purchase another truck, I can do so much more work and also, you know, provide more income and for my family and for others. And the cost of being able to do that was, he said that the loans that he could get were only around 28 to 30% interest. And that just is unreasonable for someone to be able to, you know, to expand their business. They're doing well. They want to reinvest. So we've got to look at that to see, you know, is there that opportunities for some low interest loans there?
Yeah, that's way too much.
It is. I couldn't, and I talked to more than one person about that. I said, does this sound right? and he was like, yeah, it sounds very right. So I couldn't believe it. And so that's really something to be looked at when we have people that are entrepreneurs and they're saying, okay, I'm going to start my own business. Well, we've got to make sure that we provide a platform for them to be able to get started, to get that business rolling, and then grow that business. Because when that happens, we all are raised up from that, right? And with that, you know, I look at workforce development. This is a piece to get people ready to be able to go to work. We've got a great workforce out there. It's just that, are they ready to work? Are they ready to get those jobs that when they come available? We have a large business that's coming in to Columbus, close to the 25th House District, but it's Rogue Fitness, and they build fitness equipment. But they're a large business, and my thing is, are the folk ready in the 25th House District and others to get those jobs? And so that we can make sure that happened through workforce development, through providing, you know, more funding and for workforce development to get people ready to get these jobs. Because I've heard, you know, I've lived in Columbus, Ohio all my life, and all too often I hear, well, you know, these jobs came into town, but then the employer says, well, there's nobody nobody skilled with the particular skills that we need to take those jobs here locally in the community. And I'm not saying that of Rogue, but I'm just saying, you know, over the many years that I've been here and I've heard that. So I want to make sure that when a business is coming in or we're attracting new business to not only the district but to Central Ohio, that we make sure that, people are ready to take those jobs. And so it's some proactive work there that, I want to make sure that happens and that the funding is necessary for that. Going on to safety, well, and let me just veer off here one, because one of my platforms or things, items that I talk about also, in addition to safety, and I'll get to that in just one moment, is family. And I say that because of the quality of life of families. And because all, you know, my 23 years of service that I have had with the City of Columbus, I've been really grassroots, really working with the communities and addressing quality of life issues. So, you know, one of the pieces of quality of life where I look at is, you know, is again with the mental health issues affecting not only our youth, you know, with PTSD and dealing with continual crisis in environment, but also with those who are dealing with addictions, and which is a mental health issue, in which we've got to make sure that we have in place those agencies and proper funding for those current agencies that can address the mental health issues, whether it be addictions, whether it be the youth PTSD, because this is the health of the community, and this is what is one of those other building blocks for the community. Also here in Columbus, we're doing a we are, I don't know, first or second worst in infant mortality in the country. I think we're in the top five, I believe it is. But it is something not to be proud of, but we're addressing that issue. But when you look at the statistics and the research that has been done in regards to infant mortality in the communities, you can see where we have to have, you know, these wraparound services, you know, because these babies are dying, you know, weekly before their first birthday. And when you look at the environmental factors and those causations of that, then you see these other areas crop up when it comes to mental health, when it comes to environment, when it comes to all these different things, lack of education, et cetera. So I always believe, you know, when we're addressing issues, we must look at them holistically to address those issues and not just put a Band-Aid on something. Looking at infant mortality, you know, these, once again, quality of life issues. Vacant and abandoned housing is a real problem in some communities here in Central Ohio. I know we have that on in my district, particularly in the 25th House District, and we've got to address those, and that is dealing with either, you know, the current owners or owners who are the vacant, you know, owners who have gone somewhere else and have just left the property to fall apart. We've got to have some more stringent policy to address these issues so that the cities can be able to address them quicker. Oftentimes through code enforcement and others, it takes so long, too long, to be able to take over and address these issues for the health of the community. And then, you know, often in families, the families, you know, are sometimes it's only a woman is the head of the household. You know, the father is gone for whatever reason, but we have these single women who are raising families. So being the head of households, you know, but they're still paid, you know, less than the male counterpart, you know, and for doing the same job, you know, when it's about 78 cents on the dollar. That has to change. It has to change. Because, you know, one in four women in Central Ohio, I believe, are not economically secure. And currently they can experience, currently the unemployment rate for single women is about 7%. So we've got to make sure that we address those issues and making sure that the, you know, for women are paid equally to men. Because one of my positions as when I worked for the city was I was the director of the Columbus Community Relations Commission. And working for that commission, we enforced the Civil Rights Code in housing, employment, and public accommodations. So when I see these things happen and disparate treatment, I feel very strongly that we have to address these issues. So the last piece was the safety. And safety is a piece that's definitely been in the news recently, and it's a piece that I also feel strongly about in regards to making sure that the adequate resources and are necessary. So, you know, in the state of Ohio, we have, I think it's 831 police agencies. So it comes out to about 26,000 sworn officers. Could be a little more than that now, a little more, a little less. But I want to make sure that, you know, I understand there's a pot of training, but I want to make sure all the agencies have standardized training, and so that they have to meet these requirements. And currently, I know there's through a pot of the requirement, but I think that the level needs to be upped a little bit, and to make sure that there's also the de-escalation and cultural competency training. Because in the city of Columbus, we're a very diverse community, but also it is happening around the state. So I want to make sure that there's a standardized training that, you know, whether you're a small department or a large department, that you're getting the same type of training and the same amount of training. Columbus, I know, does, I think, 600 more hours than what is required by OPATA. I believe that's the number. So I think that, you know, we should have best practices of what is needed, but make sure that we make sure all our officers are getting that training and that they have the resources, that the agencies get the necessary resources, the necessary funding to be able to do that, to do that training, because when there is training, then they're off the streets, and so they have to have officers that are on the street during those times also. So I want to make sure that happens or really press on that. Currently, I know within Columbus, Ohio, they're getting body cameras, and that's coming up here very soon. I think in 2017 those should start to roll out, which is a good thing. But we need to make sure that happens and that there's proper resources available for that to happen across the state. So again, that we're on that everybody's doing the same thing. And then reducing crime. One piece that I feel strongly about in reducing crime, that we can reduce crime through reducing recidivism, right? Recidivism, you know, within the first year after release is very high and just continues to get higher, well, the second, third year. So we have to address that to make sure that our penal systems, pre- and post-release, the programs that they have in there are measurable, have measurable outcomes, but also are resourced properly. And understand that makes sure that the programs that work, right? So I know DRC has implemented some changes recently, but we also, I feel as though, we must build upon them. So to continue to make that go and have that going in the right direction. But when we look at post-release, they often get out and run into a problem of recidivism because of the fact that they get out, they, you know, if they can't get a job and they can't, then they can't put a roof over their heads and then they can't eat, and so then you're going right back to the community that you had the problem with. And then right back into the same problem. Well, I think I think we should go to a public works program, you know, which is, a labor works that you're doing a job that provides a skill, and it could be, you know, something from lawn care to cleaning the streets and what have you. But it's a public works program that's geared toward felons, so putting them back to work. So they come out. And they're putting them back to work. They're getting some money in their pocket to be able to do the things necessary to provide for their families, to get a roof over their head, and to feel as though that they are somebody. So that we aren't, when felons return to, when people have done their time and they're returning to the community, that they're not doing another life sentence out in the community because there are so many obstacles in their way that they cannot survive, and or it's just so difficult that it's hard to do that. So I'm hoping that we can look at a public works program that's geared toward felons. And then lastly, with these issues that we just had with this tragic death of this young 13-year-old child when he was carrying a BB gun and the officer fired upon him and tragically the young boy was killed. Well, I know currently we have there's a law in place in regards to guns that look like real guns or look-alike guns, but they are it only applies toward you know some of the what do you call them, BB or not or water guns and those type of things, but there is a but it does not apply to those guns such as BB guns or pellet firing guns. So it says anything with an air projectile, explode projectile through the force of air pressure. So I feel as though we need to amend that and to also address BB and paintball and pellet firing air weapons, because this isn't the first time this has happened. I know in the country, I've lived long enough to see this happen in the past when it happened to be a pellet gun or a squirt gun or something to that effect that looked so much like a real gun. So those are the areas, my platform, in which I feel strongly about. I know there's you know other things that I know within a 25th House District that I really want to address, including, you know, we must come together as a district, as a city, to address issues collectively, regardless from what party that you're from and or what your background is or ethnicity. We've got to think about, you know, servicing our young people, our community as a whole. And I think that I truly believe we can come together to do that, because I feel that we're all trying to get to the same place. It's just a matter of how we get there.
All right. Well, Napoleon, I appreciate that. And I do have some follow-up questions. I have a list of five follow-up questions I'd like to ask. Some of them you addressed, like you already addressed the body cameras, which I think is an important thing. And it's being implemented across the country. It's positive, I think, for police officers and the civilians. And also regarding the recidivism, I mean, recently I saw an article about Denmark's prison system. And I'm not saying we should necessarily do that exactly, but we could probably learn a few things from it. And you were a police officer at one point. Is that correct? I think I read that.
Yes. Yes. I was a police officer from 93 to 2005 as far as a full-time police officer, and then I became a reserve officer for another 11 years.
Awesome. And let me just ask you before I ask these follow-up questions, why are you running as an independent instead of, you know, one of the main two parties?
Well, you know, I transitioned, you know, so I was working with the City of Columbus up until February of 2016. So, and things happened pretty quickly on the transition. So, I had to run as a independent, but run as an independent was a piece also that I felt, you know, strongly about, because in my job as director of CRC, we were the organization that people came to mediate issues, to address issues, to bring people together. We were the convener, and as a director, I convened many of meetings and dealt with many different entities. We even, you know, did police relations. We started a process called the Community Intervention Teams, which is actually bringing together leaders of the community, working together with law enforcement and others to come together to sign off on a document at the end of an agreement of how to address issues going forward. So this is the type of the work that I did. And also as a police officer, I was a liaison officer. So a community liaison officer, we have 20 community liaison officers that work with block watches, civics, area commissions, and community. We work on issues to provide long-term solutions. So it's always been my nature to bring people together to address issues. And so as a independent, I felt, you know, I looking at the national elections and things that were going on, just the environment, I feel as though, you know, I'm the type of person who wants to do the right thing and wants to bring people together to address issues and resolve those issues, to be able to go forward, to remember that we stay focused on the community. Because I feel as though sometimes that's lost. So we're so busy fighting with each other you know, whether between parties or what have you, that we lose the focus on the residents and the community. So as an independent, I feel it's a great position because of the fact that I want to be focused on the community, and I want to bring the two parties together, because I understand it in the House of Representatives, you know, is, even if it was to be as a Democrat, you know, you're the minority party, and trying to get things done is difficult as far as to get legislation passed, or even heard at sometimes. But the thing is, with the skill sets that I have and the work that I've always done, I feel as though to be able to, and the relationships that I've built and the leadership that I have shown through, I can work with Democrats, Republicans, independents, the community of the of legislators, to be able to really drill down and make sure that we continue our focus on the community and address those issues that way. So, as an independent, I think that is more possible, that we can get through this gridlock, and we can get through, and we can make sure people stay focused on the task at hand, being the residents of for me it'd be of you know, the 25th House District, and then also for the state of Ohio.
Well, I admire anyone running as a representative for the people, for the right reasons, and especially someone who's running as an independent. So I do want to ask just a range of like state type issues here, and some of them we'll cover back. It will be follow up questions on your three main issues. But I did have some issues I wanted to ask you that probably would affect your area. You know, we heard about the water issues like in Michigan, and I think what I've read, there might have been some across the country and maybe in Ohio. You know, will you be looking into, you know, the quality of water, drinking water, if you're a representative?
Well, yes. I mean, definitely. If that's a problem within our state, most definitely. I know that you know, as I was working with the city as a director, you know, I was sat next to often the director of but the director of utilities and what have you, and I know with the city it was definitely a concern to make sure that the drinking water was clean and safe, and didn't have any issues there, and if there was something that was cropping up, that it was quickly addressed. So statewide, it's very important. You know, when I think about quality of life, you know, and the family, and drinking water is up there, you know, number one in regards to that. This is something that's coming into our households that can affect us negatively, as it's done with those in Flint. So we've got to make sure that there is are the safety of that, and that the plants are safe, address any issue quickly, and make sure the public is aware if there is an issue, that so proper measures can be taken, and that, you know, that they can be advised of that.
Okay, and what about, I'm just going to run through a couple issues quick here. What about eminent domain? Do you think there could be some more safeguards on that?
Yeah, you know, with eminent domain, I do worry about that, I want to make sure that, you know, boundaries aren't overstepped in that area, because I've talked to a few people that have dealt with that, and it was tough. So I think there needs to be, you know, look at the positives and the negatives about, you know, how far reaching that goes. So I we really need to keep an eye on that, but also be a part of the conversation. So I always say that, you know, when we have these things, we got to continue the conversation, and continue to have the input of the community in these conversations, because there are the ones that are affected by this and impacted by this, and that's one thing I really pride myself on, is to be that person who listens to the community, who works with the community, but most importantly, you've got to, you know, hear what they're saying, often we might, you know, they might yell and be upset because they're passionate about what's going on. But we've got to peel back the layers of that onion and really work and to address those issues, because this is, you know, something that, you know, people are losing homes, et cetera, on this. And so we've got to really take a good look at that and make sure that there's that it's done properly.
Yeah, yeah, it's a concern to you, and you'd want to make sure it's as fair as possible. Now, what about property tax? Like property taxes, some people might lose their homes because they aren't able to pay the bills. Should they have extensions? And also, regarding property taxes, that's usually what funds education. So, you know, you could be from a rich neighborhood, have a very nice school, and due to no fault, you know, or, you know, any consequence of your own actions just because you happen to be in a good neighborhood. So if you could touch on the two aspects of property tax, some people losing their homes because they can't pay the property tax, should they have an extended time, and then just overall the reform to equalize educational opportunities.
Yeah, through, well, you know, it's, I never like to hear of the issue of someone losing their home due to a property tax issue, and I'm it's good though that there's, you know, that there's extensions available, especially now. I mean, we're on the, you know, we're pretty much on the rebound or in regards to the last recession, which affected so many, but you know, you come down to you know, again, we're looking at opportunities for success based upon your zip code. And it is something that with property taxes, I could get into a whole thing in regards to gentrification and so on and so on. But it is something that I think that we need to look at overall. And it's hard for me to really address with one instance or one answer, because there's so many things I think that play into it. And again, like I said, I don't like a Band-Aid. I like to be able to look at the whole piece and be able to then have those conversations with, whether it be the persons who are impacted, and also those, you know, on both sides, or should I say on all sides of this. So I know property taxes goes in, you know, into the schools and what have you, and that if you're in a more affluent area, your opportunities are better. But I know that also. I'm trying to think of the local schools on the funding there, and depending upon how that breakdown is. But I wish I had a good answer for you on that, and I really don't. I would have to really look at it overall and be better informed on the overall issue.
Well, we appreciate that, and I do see a holistic approach. I mean, even looking at your issues, it starts with economics and education, which will eventually affect the economics, and so they kind of go hand in hand. And as far as recidivism, I mean, that all affects economics, and it affects what we have to spend publicly. So it is very holistic. Before I get into some justice system reforms, just one other question for local representatives. Do you think there could be any reform or safeguards, let's say, for asset forfeiture?
You know, I have addressed that.
Well, the reason we ask is, you know, there's the war on drugs, and recently I've seen a statistic that asset forfeitures have, you know, gotten. There's more asset forfeitures than there actually has been burglaries, and a lot of times people might have their assets seized before they have a court hearing and things like that. So it'd just be something to maybe look into. I don't know how much of an issue it is in the state of Ohio, but I did want to address, on you mentioned body cameras, and just p- people having confidence in the justice system. I'm sure everyone appreciates a good, honest police officer and looks up to a good, honest police officer. What are some other reforms? Do you think there should be an independent internal affairs? You already mentioned better training. And maybe, you know, with that better training, having the resources for the police officers, do you think there is a quota system as far as police departments go? And I know a lot of them say there isn't, but it seems like, you know, maybe there is. And could there be some safeguards for whistleblowers who want to speak out against that, or maybe some safeguards to make sure that there isn't actually a quota system?
Okay, so let me. Are you talking about quota system as far as like writing tickets? You have to have write so many tickets, et cetera, et cetera. Is that the quota?
Sure, stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay. So let me. I'll address the quota system and go to the other ones. I know as far as, and I can only speak for the Columbus Vision Police because that's what I formerly worked for. There's not a quota system as far as tickets and what have you. You didn't get paid anymore, et cetera, et cetera. Now, now if you're a part of Freeway Patrol, and this might apply to the State Highway Patrol, if there's not, you know, if that's what you're doing and you're to enforce the speed limits on the highways, and you don't write any tickets, and then that can be problematic because that's your whole job. Now, as far as the average patrol officer, there are not any quotas within the Columbus Division of Police, and I feel. Now, statewide, that there should not be any quotas. If there are for the local police officer on the street, I don't see why there would be a quota for tickets. But in regards to overall, when we talk about you know, what could be done to better build trust between community and police. You know, there were several things that I know that I worked on when I was as a director. You know, we started a program called the ABCs of Police and Fire. As a matter of fact, there's still videos on YouTube about with it. And this was a program that myself and I think it was Commander Jeff Blackwell, he was commander at that time, and also Lieutenant Dave Sawyer of the Columbus Fire Department. We put together. And had a live TV show talking about what's going on in the community, you know, the rules and procedures, et cetera. And it was a call-in show. So people could call into the television show and talk about, you know, and ask questions of the police officer and firefighter. And then we took it on the road. We did it out in communities. And we did, what we did is we actually did the reenactments, we did role playing. And so we did taser demonstrations, we did role playing of traffic stops or shooting scenarios, all of those with the community to help them better understand, you know, why police and firefighters do what they do, but also to have the police officer and firefighters there to understand the perspective of the community when an officer does X, Y, and Z, right? And so we did that for many years, starting, I think, in 2004. And then we actually started doing it in different languages. So we started doing it in Somali because we have a high Somali population, I think the second highest in the country behind Minneapolis. And also did it in Spanish. And we developed DVDs for this so that they could give out to the community about how to interact with the police and fire departments. So this was a piece that we did for a long time, and then... it continued to grow a little bit, and now I think the police are doing this in the high schools. So these type of things to continue educating community about why police and fire do what they do, but also to have that connection and a positive atmosphere between the police and community and police and the schools. This is something that I feel as though is very positive and helps each other understand each other. So that's a big thing. So I think that has worked well. I think, you know, more of that is the more we can do of that, the better, the more connection. I mean, there, you know, when we talk about community policing, that's what it's all about. is to get out of the cruiser and walk the neighborhoods, talk to folk. And I think that could be a part of also, you know, when I talked about enhancing the standardized training or making sure we have the same training, that potentially could be part of the training to take the recruits out into the communities that don't necessarily look like them and build that awareness and understanding of the various communities that you're going to be working in.
Well, I was just going to say, NapoleonBell.com, and you seem like the type of police officer that everyone, you know, would have wanted in their neighborhood, and the type that person that we want to send to represent us. And just two follow-up questions, and we have 5 minutes, or we got 4 minutes and a half left here.
Okay.
Do you think the war on drugs should be treated as more of a health problem rather than a criminal problem? And then finally, I just want to just add in the last question here. Can you tell us some of your favorite people, past or present, elected or not?
Okay. War on drugs. The war on drugs was something. It's definitely a health problem. We have a health issue, and persons who are taking drugs, and it goes back to what I said earlier, taking drugs and mental health issues, because anytime you talk to anybody in AA and what have you that deal with those persons who have drug issues, it comes down to mental health and those other issues that then began the drug problem. So it's truly a mental health issue, and I think we should treat it as such. And then you say the last question was
some of your favorite people, past or present, elected or not.
Well, you know, my favorite people, you know, I think of the person who, you know, mentored me really, and who I've always looked up to, and I've got to go to my father. He was a lawyer here in the city of Columbus. He was definitely a civil rights advocate. He was very well respected. He thought of people first. You know, after his passing in 2012, I can't tell you how many people came up to me and just said, I respected your father so much. And so that is who I try to, however I can be, you know, fill those shoes, which I'm still working on that. So I really just look up to him more than any, you know, more than anybody else. I mean, him, my mother, my father, My father really continues to give me guidance during those times, and he would, I don't know what he would be saying about me running for office, because he never ran for office. They wanted him to run for judge, but he never ran for office. He was the chief counsel for Governor Celeste, I think he would be proud that at least I'm continuing to stay involved in the community and really passionate about people. And I say really passionate about humans, all people here in the 25th House District and the state of Ohio, because everybody is important. And so, yes, he's my number one. You know, my family, you know, is always first in my mind. And so that's who leads me. He and God, you know, lead me to make sure I do the right things.
Sounds good. And what's in the final time we have left here, what's a pitch to your district and any upcoming events, Napoleon? We appreciate your time today.
Oh, not a problem. Well, I tell you, my last, you know, my final pitch in a sense is, you know, I have 23 years of service to the community. I'm very passionate about the city of Columbus, the 25th House District. I care about all the people in Central Ohio, all the people in Ohio. Because I know there are those who are struggling and those who are doing well. But I think we all need to come together. We are in some very tough times, politically, emotionally, environmentally. We are in some tough times. And we need to come together to lift everyone up, to be able to make a difference. My tagline is get involved, get engaged, and together we can make a difference. And I strongly feel that. I think there is nothing that we cannot do collectively, but we just have to make sure that we stay focused on why we do what we do. And I urge all elected officials, all persons of civil service, civil servants, and everyone to remain focused on why we're here and what we're here to do, and to really make a positive difference, because we all want the same thing. And that's what we need to stay focused on. It's just a matter of we worked collectively to get there. And don't mind who gets the credit, but just let's make sure that we get to where we need to go. So I'm hoping that, that I earn the vote. I'm up against some odds of being the independent, as your show states. But I think that people will be as an informed voter. And I tell people, make sure you're informed about who you vote for, and especially in the 25th House District, do the research, look who has the leadership style that you want to represent you, as a state representative for the 25th House District. Don't just vote for someone that you see on a piece of paper. You know, we work too hard to be able to have the right to vote. So exercise your right, but make sure you're an informed voter to exercise that right.
Thank you, Napoleon, and thank you for taking the time to inform our audience that there are more options, not less options, than Republican and Democrat. You have an independent running here in Ohio District number 25. And again, please visit NapoleonBell.com, and you'll see the events and everything there. So thank you so much for taking the time. We really, really appreciate you doing that and engaging with us and educating and informing the audience here. Thanks so much, Napoleon.
Thank you. Have a great week.
Thanks so much, sir. You too.
All right. We'll see you now.